This is Earth Tribe Radio, www.earthtriberadio.com. Hey, Jill.
Hi, Fiona.
You had something really interesting here.
Yeah, there is a wonderful quote from Carl Jung, and I think it's really worth thinking about and discussing, and if I can read it to you, I might read it a couple of times, but let me read it once now. And here it is. If our religion is based on salvation, our chief emotions will be fear and trembling. If our religion is based on wonder, our chief emotion will be gratitude.
And that is so huge, because most people are based on salvation. I mean, most religions are based on salvation. And not to say that any religion is wrong, but just that aspect of it.
Exactly. Now, I was raised Catholic back in the 40s and 50s.
Yes.
I left when I left boarding school in the early 60s and went to live in England, and decided to forego church for the first time on a Sunday, and I waited all day. I was staying in a bed and breakfast place, and I was waited all day to be struck dead by lightning. But and I wasn't, so I thought, oh, good. But having been brought up through the 40s, 50s, the McCarthy era, in the 60s, the Catholic Church where I was raised was based on fear.
Mm.
The whole thing was based on fear. The fear of God, the fear of this, the fear of that, and not the love of God, not the love of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a profound effect on me. And then I began to explore, maybe that's why religions as such were created, is to control the people. Most religions anyway.
And different aspects of religions, because you get most of the prophets that started, I mean, none of the prophets started the religions. Most of the religions that were started around the prophets, like Jesus or Muhammad, had an amazing story, amazing gifts to share.
And were all about love and compassion and kindness and gratitude and being in service to others. That was how they all started out.
Yes.
And all their premises and all the religions that we've been through, and we looked at their guiding principles, are almost always the same, which is that a kindness and compassion, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
And so if you have that guiding premise of, what was the guiding premise again for this one?
Oh, the religion is based on
salvation,
or wonder and awe is what I'm.
So it's always putting somebody else ahead of, like, somebody else you have to follow. Somebody else is going to get you.
Salvation is being saved.
Yes.
Like, I can't save myself, so it's God that's going to save me. And if I don't do this, then I won't be saved. If I don't do this, I won't be saved. So the religion's based on salvation. I think we need to realize that that was not what the original prophet, like Jesus or Muhammad or any of the others, the Hindu ones, ever had in mind. Buddha ever had in mind is to terrify and proclaim that something else other than yourself is the salvation. It was all that the awe and the wonder is all within you, the connection to oneness. To
yeah, it's when they lost, I think, somewhere along the line, when we've talked about this before, but when people focus around a prophet of some kind, a great person who's got great insight, they tend to try to become that person, but not from an inside person always, but from an outside. Mm-hmm. That's why I think Buddha at some stage, I think, said, if someone tries to show you the way, cut off the finger.
Yeah.
Because it's like when you're trying to show people... Point the way.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you're trying to show somebody or point the way for them, it then comes to them from an outside point, as opposed to from an inner point.
Well, and it's also... It's Gandhi said the same thing, and so did Krishnamurti. Don't follow me, you know. I'm not a leader. But they were, because they practiced the kindness, the compassion, and everything that the good prophets all came into being for. It's just the people who took over that they're
trying to be them.
Trying to be them. Would then say, well, I need to control the people to make them do this and to obey me and to give 10% of your income to me and give to the church and give to... The church would normally... The prophets, you know, it wasn't about that at all when you go back to the very beginning.
It's about connecting to the infinite, connecting to the oneness within us, and making ourselves...
And connecting to each other.
So that when you're deeply connected to your oneness within you, or the source within you, you are naturally connected to everything else, and you can't do any harm, because as you're connected to everything, so you see you're compassionate.
You're part of everything.
You're part of everything. And so I think what happens is that trying so hard, we know that in trying you lose that connection. So when people try to meditate or try to be good or try to follow something, or when the trying happens, you lose the connection, and that's when the harshness. I've seen it happen around teachers who emerge as... from, you know, being wonderful mm-hmm. teachers, and then I've seen the organizations gather around them who become totally confused. Mm-hmm. And it's a unfortunate thing when we try to be mm-hmm. other than our connection to our infinite.
Yeah, I always encourage people, and I know it's happened to you, it's happened to me, when we've helped people and then they come to us because we're the ones that can do it for them. And what I say is, no. I'm not the one that's doing it for you. I'm helping you find the way you do it for yourself. How you heal whatever it is that that you feel needs healing. And I always say, stay away from the gurus. Anyone who sets themselves up as a guru, stay away from them. There are wonderful people who are teachers. I know it's in so many communities. I know. I have so many friends who are so into their yoga, and you know, they'll say, "Well, my guru or that," and I think, then it starts. Then you're holding somebody above you. You're not connected to them anymore.
Well, you're also connected to yourself, because you're thinking someone else has the answer.
Yeah.
Now, I do have to put a little thing in there, which is some people need to do that for as long as they need to do that. Because they can't quite step out on their own yet, or they don't
yes.
have the feeling like they can step inwards to who they are. So
well,
they have to walk with somebody for a while.
So that's what I would call a guide. You know, that's why that's somebody to help you when you're down, and you need assistance in something. I just recall I really wanted my teacher to come, and in the Native American way, I really wanted my teacher to come, and I would pray for that, and this person arrived, and boy was this person a teacher. This person taught me how absolutely wrong it is to do what they do, and how what they put them, it taught me so much, but all the things, you know, and you can get hurt that way. You can get hurt when you just give over to your teacher. You ask for a guide. Ask for somebody to help you in the steps when you're faltering in something.
And also, if you want to follow somebody, be inside you, and you can take the gifts they can give, but stay eyes open, so that you know that they're human too, and they're walking, and sometimes they've crossed the bridge into the vastness, and sometimes they won't. So don't put them on a pedestal. You can help use them as a guide, as long as you have consciousness and mindfulness in what you're doing,
and always honor them with a thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, thank you for helping me. Thank you for helping me. Whether, you know, I often with the ancestors, the old ones, I will offer tobacco when I'm going for a walk to the earth in honor of the, and thank them. Thank them for the dream that I had that helped me discover something. or revelation that I had that I was blind to. Thank you.
I think this is the difference between a doctrine where you've got to follow it, and if you're too scared not to follow it because you don't know who you are without it, mm-hmm. then people become rigid and aggressive with the doctrine. Mm-hmm. If you can do what you just said and feel that vastness within you and feel connected to all things, then you can look at the teachings of any of the great teachers and say, this part works for me and this part doesn't work for me. And I honor that teacher and give them thanks mm-hmm. for these parts and for helping me build bridges back into who mm-hmm. I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Because the...
And I want to point out another little experiment. I underwent hypnosis once to get through a habit of smoking in one of my attempts to... like three attempts to do that. I remember hearing the guy say, because when you undergo hypnosis for something like this, you have the right to, you're aware of everything. Mm-hmm. You need to be aware of everything. And in the middle of his whole hypnosis thing, he was saying, and you will hate anybody that smokes, and you will get angry with them when they, and I thought, no, I won't. And I really thought, that's a terrible thing to do. It's putting something else. So in the same thing is when you're being guided or taught something, be appreciative of the things that help you. The things that don't help you or irritate you or send alarm bells out, disregard them, put them away.
And bring consciousness and mindfulness mm-hmm. to them, because yeah. it may be that you look at them later and go, oh yeah, actually that wasn't so bad, that was yeah. helpful. But you may also say, like you said, this is not for me and I don't need to be putting this into my depths of my subconscious yeah. either.
To hate or get angry with anyone and tell them what they can do and what they can't do.
Well, as soon as somebody says that, you know that they're not connected and they're coming from, not from from love and completeness, but from, which is not constant, but we go in and out of, but from a place of thinking they know and they have to follow some kind of doctrine, even if it's the doctrine, I mean, it's not a doctrine, even if it's, this is the way you do hypnosis. I mean, it's, there's somebody honking out there.
Somebody who has a lot of impatience.
Yes.
So here it is again. If our religion is based on salvation, our chief emotions will be fear and trembling. If our religion is based in wonder, awe, our chief emotion will be gratitude.
And that's a life-changing thing, because...
It's also a key to keeping one young in spirit.
Ah.
It's a huge key to keep young in spirit, to have awe in your life, even to your dying day, it keeps you young.
Yes. And to the gratitude and appreciation as well, mm. because when we are the victim, we can't stay in gratitude or appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the whole... there are many gifts in our lives, but remaining conscious... I think the other thing we want to ask is, what makes a master like Jesus or Muhammad or Moses or Zoroaster or any of the great teachers, what makes those masters a master, and why do people follow them?
You know, what strikes me instantly with that question is, when you look at each one of these, they look outside themselves. They know who they are, and they look outside themselves. Their interest and their concern is for the... Well, you know, there's that wonderful quote, that there are no others. You mm. know, there are no others. We are the others. In other words... so if we can see, I think all of them, Jesus and... Muhammad and Moses and
Buddha,
there were no others. They were not in competition with, they were not trying to get the better of, they were not trying to control anybody. Krishnamurti, their lives were their gift, their sharing, their understanding that we are all one, we are all connected, and what makes us work in the healthiest way is if we know that you are part of me and you are part of me and I'm part of you and I'm part of that. Without understanding all of that, we get the machine breaks down.
And I think that just if we just take Buddha, who was Indian, right? And he was a prince.
Mm-hmm.
And
Siddhartha.
He had lived the highest life ever possible.
Behind high walls.
Everything that he could possibly want. When he came out, right, he saw all of the... He wasn't supposed to see that, but he saw
snuck out.
All the suffering, and he'd never experienced anybody suffering before. So it just, like, flipped his mind. And then he spent years trying to work this out in the wilderness,
many different things, just like Jesus went into the wilderness, maybe not for many years, maybe for 40 days, but you know, it's a time when you know, all the great leaders have taken themselves apart from the quote unquote the reality around them and the forces and the pressures and the stresses around them to see what is.
And to connect to that vastness. And as they do so strongly, they kind of radiate this vastness. Because you can still feel it in Krishnamurti's place. I took a friend there, and that was never there. But I took a friend up there in Ojai. And when you go into the room in which he lived, it's actually this, there's still this emanation there. It's still a strength of energy. And I think that's why people try to go back to where Muhammad was or where Jesus was, because there's a bit of a signature. I'm sure where Jesus was, there's been so many people walking, so you might not feel it, but with Krishnamurti, you can feel it.
I've been, you know, where they to Bethlehem.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Back in, I guess it was 1970, I think, just after the Six-Day War, and I went to Bethlehem, and let me tell you, it is tricked out like Las Vegas.
Oh, really?
With the lights and the this and that. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, isn't that humanity? That is so emblematic.
Well, it's even with Egypt, when I was there in the early 70s also, you could still, be, even though it had been millions of tourists, there was still a signature there of strength and connection. And I don't know now, because it's so long and there are so many more millions of tourists, and you can find the same, incidentally, if you're looking for this place and you can't quite get it. If you go into what I call deep nature, which is nature that hasn't been squashed by a thousand humans running all over it unconsciously, and you just sit there, you can find that same place where Buddha was, where Jesus was, where Moses was, and you can get to that place. You won't be able to keep it all the time. But once you've been there and you know you've got to that great depth, you can keep reminding yourself to keep going there. Yes. It's like a memory that keeps bringing you back to that place of mastery.
Well, and you know, you can find that in many places, because there are many places where holy or sacred, amazing things have taken place on our planet that we don't even know about. And a lot of times it exists in the wilderness or out in the plains or out in the outback or by a river. Mm. And it's because it still exists, because it's not easily accessible. The trees, also, if you go into a forest, the trees are really very protective of the land around. And you connect with the trees and it will become a sacred place for you.
And you get to an older tree, like we had 450-year-old trees on our farm, on our place in New York. And it wasn't a farm, it was just a piece of land, beautiful piece of land. But when we go down here to the great redwoods in California or up to Kings Canyon where they have a 1,000-year-old tree. When you, they're like visiting this incredible master teacher. Mm-hmm. If you can spend time, like spend a whole day sitting there, take a picnic and sit with them.
You know, on the way up, to, if you're leaving Los Angeles, you can take 395 and go up towards Carson City, Mammoth, Reno, if you need to. And there's the bristlecone pine forest there. Oh. And they are the oldest trees, I think, in America. They're not big, and the forest doesn't look like a forest. But I remember helping a friend whose child had committed suicide and up there in Mammoth. And I was driving home after being with her for a week or two, and I just pulled into the bristlecone pine forest, stopped the car, and got out and just started singing. I'm not a singer. I can barely carry a tune. But I sang. I sang to Mother Earth. I sang to the ancestors. I sang and sang. And the feeling of being surrounded by these old...
great teachers.
These teachers. They loved the songs. They loved the songs. And they I really felt them appreciate the effort, and they just took the sadness of my soul away so I could get home without carrying that sadness with me.
And trees are amazing masters of energy, and rocks too, big rocks. And you can also pick up at a crystal store or even on eBay a piece of fossilized tree, because that carries very ancient energy, and I always have one on my desk so that if something's been happening, I just hold that for a while and it will calm me and bring energy and balance back to the liver, but also to the whole body.
Yeah.
So there are lots of ways to find the masters in your life. It doesn't mean you have to stop being in the religion that you're in, because it may be feeding you other things. But just remember that the originating point of that religion was that teacher or that master connecting to the vastness within them, not to the doctrine, because they actually had nothing to do with the doctrine. Jesus wasn't a Christian, for example.
No.
Muhammad wasn't a Muslim.
No.
So it's like we have to remember, go back to the core. Go back to the essence.
And Buddha wasn't a Buddhist.
No. Yeah, so we all have it in us. We all have the same energy in us. And maybe you could read that just one more time.
If our religion is based on salvation, our chief emotions will be fear and trembling. If our religion is based on wonder, awe, our chief emotion will be gratitude.
That's a beautiful quote. Thank you, Jill. This is Earth Tribe Radio, www.earthtriberadio.com.
Your home on planet Earth.